Welcome to the Mumbrella Cast. I'm Tim Burrows. On our latest podcast, we return to our Mumbrella 360 series and to marketer Joe Talcott, analysing a sometimes dysfunctional relationship between marketers, their agencies, and the media. Joining Joe is Sandra Hook, former News Life Media CEO, Marion Bess, MD of Droga5, and Tara Lord-Smith, GM of Marketing for Simplot Australia. Joe discusses with his panel why agencies are idiots, why marketers are idiots, and why the media owners just go along with both of them. Also, why you should try and own the media relationship, and why respect shouldn't be something earned, it should be a starting point. Plus, Sandra Hook talks about reasonable briefing, Marion Bess on why the best agency collaborations are yet to come, and Tara Lord-Smith on getting agencies to take ownership of the brand.
Welcome, my name is Joe Talcott, and I'm going to be leading this next session. I hope you had an opportunity to read what's on the screen. It wasn't just a holding screen, it is part of the presentation. And it ties in to a story that I want to tell you. I forgot the microphone is only here. About 150 years ago, Mark Twain had made a close friend in the middle of the U.S. At the time, Mark Twain was 15 years old, and the friend he made was a young black slave. And I want to read to you what he said about that experience. He said, "I had a friend whose society was very dear to me because I was forbidden by my mother to partake it. He was a gay and impudent and satirical and delightful young black man, a slave, who daily preached sermons from the top of his master's woodpile, with me the sole audience. He imitated the pulpit style of several clergymen of the village and did it well and with fine passion and energy. One of his texts was this: 'You tell me where a man gets his corn pone, and I'll tell you what his pinions is.'" Now, what he meant by that was that your public opinion is influenced by where you get your food, your bread and water, where you get paid, where you're employed. And I use it to start this presentation because I agree with Mark's observation on this, that oftentimes where you're remunerated has an impact on what your opinions are, or at least what your public opinions are and what you can say. And today I stand in front of you unencumbered by those chains of employment. So I plan to give you my views in frank a way as possible and that good manners will permit. I'm going to be talking about this relationship between marketers, agency, and media. And before I do, could I ask those of you that work for marketers or are a marketer, if you would raise your hand? So we can see what the split is. Fantastic. And next, if you work for an agency, an ad agency, a PR agency, a merchandising agency, a data agency, a digital agency, an employment agency, collection agency, you raise your hand. Okay. And how many of you work in the media? Oh, great. Quite a few there. And is there anyone here that works for a company that advises to all of those three companies but don't work for one of those companies? Okay. Well, a couple of those. All right. Anyone at the wrong conference? Well, it's a pretty important topic, I reckon, because we're all trying to reach that customer or consumer or audience in the middle. But before I espouse my beliefs on this, I should give you my credentials. I've had the pleasure over my career to work for four advertising agencies, and I feel pretty good that two of them, in fact, are still in business. Although I looked up my old agency, Fahlgren Martin, and found that they are now, in fact, Fahlgren Mortine. Now, if you're like me, my first thought was they merged with an insecticide. You know, that's pretty strange. But it isn't. It's a different spelling. And I think Mr. or Ms. Mortine is an advertising person. My experience with marketers is more limited. I've worked for a big one, though, and that was McDonald's. And I had the opportunity to work for them in about 23 different countries around the world and for a great deal of time. My experience in media is kind of a bookend to my career. And many people don't know that I started my career as a media owner. My colleague and I, as soon as we got out of school, we bought this this advertising blimp. It's a tethered blimp, and you put somebody's sign on it, and then you fly it over a business. You know, it might be a retailer or a car dealer or whatever. And so we were media owners. And but we had a problem with our key asset, which was the blimp. And that was, on occasion, it would break its tether, and it would just fly away. Occasionally, landing, you can see from this newspaper clipping, in the front garden of a suburban home, which did generate some publicity for the blimp. But the advertiser really had paid for something to be tethered, you know, over their business and not for a free-range blimp. So the blimp business didn't work out. My next media experience was with a much larger company and one of the largest media companies in the world, and candidly quite different from my first media experience, although they too have experienced the occasional mishap. My presentation today is about threes. I will talk about, I will first tell three stories that hopefully will make some points. I will give three recommendations on how I think we need to look at this relationship in a different way. And then finally, and probably the highlight, I'm going to talk with three executives, one representing media, one marketers, and one agencies. For my first story, I'm going to ask you to travel with me, if you will, from Sydney, halfway across the world, and many years ago, to the middle of America, to a place called the Quad Cities. What you might not know, and in fact I didn't even know at the time, the Quad Cities are made up of five cities. So there you go. And it's on the Mississippi River, halfway between Chicago and Des Moines, Iowa. It's most famous as a city that manufactures big machinery branded John Deere. I wasn't there to have anything to do with that. I was there for a meeting of McDonald's owners. And I was working as the client, working for McDonald's. And people that own McDonald's restaurants in the U.S. gather together in groups built around television markets. They chip into a central fund, and that's how they fund their advertising. So on the day, we had a presentation on what we should be doing in the next quarter. And the agency was there to make this presentation. The co-op itself, these owner-operators, were an unusual group. The president of the group had been elected president for life when he dozed off in a meeting. In fact, he was elected while he was dozing off. So he would chair the meeting and start it off, and he called on the agency to make the presentation. And the presentation was made by a great account director. I'll call him Fred, because that was his name. And Fred is just a fantastic presenter. The group he was presenting to, the audience, unlike you, was not in a particularly good mood. But Fred, being the professional he was, soldiered on. And he told us why we should do this particular promotion, which I've forgotten at this point. At the end of it, a really influential businessman in the group was turning red. And he looked up at Fred and said, "Fred, that is the stupidest idea I have ever heard. In fact, you are an idiot." As you can imagine, the mood of the room became quite solemn and quiet. Most people just stared down, you know, at their papers. And Fred gave, at that time, the best rejoinder I've heard from an agency person to that kind of criticism. He looked straight back at the business person, and he said, "That's Mr. Idiot to you." Needless to say, it broke the mood, but it does make the point that there are a number of clients that think their agencies are idiots. And why do they think that? Well, they will say that, before I get to the moral of this, they will say that The agency doesn't really understand my business. They know marketing communications, but they don't know about everything that goes into my business. They will say that they don't manage the money the way I would manage my business's money. They don't have the same kind of focus on that. They'll say that the agency only thinks about ads, or depending on the agency, only about promotion, or only about PR, or only about merchandising. And they don't think about the business holistically. They will say they're not accountable for the results, at least not as accountable as the person that owns the business, or not even as accountable as the marketing director. As you've already seen, the moral to this story, agency people are idiots. My next story leaves the Quad Cities and has us traveling south to the southeast of the United States and ahead in time. I have since gone from my job at the client, and now I represent an agency. We're in beautiful Miami Beach, Florida. For those of you that haven't been there, Miami is known for fabulous harbor filled with mega cruise ships, and it's also known for its exciting nightlife. but again, not what I was there for. I was there for a similar meeting, except this time I was the agency making the presentation. So I got in front of the group, and I was well prepared. I thought we've got a sound strategy. We had good rationale to sell that strategy in. We had outstanding creative, at least in our eyes, and a solid media plan. And I made the presentation to this group. And again, deathly silence. And then I heard from one of the owners the four words most dreaded by agencies. What else you got? And I went on to say, look, we looked at all kinds of alternatives. We've filtered these down. This is our strongest recommendation. This is what you should do. And this particular owner answered with a not atypical kind of sexist comment, saying, yeah, Joe, I understand all of that. Hey, but you've shown us one thing. And he said, look, I might like the brunette, but I also want to see the blonde and the redhead, all right? And I thought to myself at that time, these people are idiots. Now, this impression of agencies thinking that the client is an idiot has been around for a long time. In fact, even before my time, if you've been in advertising for any time at all, you probably know this great quote from the legend David Ogilvy. The consumer isn't a moron, she's your wife. Most people don't know the next bit of it. Okay. David Ogilvy didn't say that, and I bet David Ogilvy wouldn't have said it, knowing about what I read. But it doesn't mean that the idea isn't there.
Baked beans and Rolling Stones. A client's idea, if I ever heard one.
Well, we might have missed that, but he said, baked beans and the Rolling Stones. A client's idea, if I've ever heard one. Another way of saying clients are idiots. So there are agencies that think clients are idiots. And why? Because they don't think that the client really understands the role of the agency or value what the agency brings. They're convinced that the agency, or that the client won't take risks. They won't put their money where their mouth is on what they say that they want to achieve. And when they see great work, they often won't fund it. So the moral of story two, clients are idiots. Now, maybe you see the pattern developing here. Agencies are idiots, clients are idiots. What about my experience in media companies? What do the media companies think? Well, what I've observed is they think, we always agree with our clients and their agencies. So what we end up with is a situation like this. Lots of finger pointing, everybody thinking that nobody else knows what they're doing. And that can cause a bit of tension in this three-way relationship. The fact is, we are all idiots, if you follow the philosophy of Will Rogers, which I quite like. Everybody is ignorant, only on different subjects. And I'm going to come back to this after story number three. So for story three, we're going to leave the southeast coast of America and fly across to San Francisco, California. We will end up specifically at a place called the Moscone Center. Now, here's a tough question, but I reckon this room will get it. Does anyone recognize this date and the significance it might have? It was 16 October 2003. Put your hand up if you know what this date is. Okay, put your hand up if you know it, and you know that I won't call on you to say what it is. Oh, good. Truthful people. Well, this is the day that Apple said hell froze over. What was happening on that day in the Moscone Center? Well, Steve Jobs was on stage, and he was launching iTunes second generation. And there were lots of great new features in the second generation iTunes. They had a way that you could buy songs with one click. That was a big deal, believe me. They let you look at movie trailers, and they had 200,000 tracks that people could download legally. They could buy. Launch price, 99 cents in the U.S. And there was one more feature. And this is the feature that people said wouldn't happen until hell froze over. And that was Apple wrote iTunes for Windows. And as we look back on this date, this is the day where the music industry business changed. Now, I don't tell that story just for that story, because there was another meeting just after the big show that always takes place around Apple announcements, and it was back in a small room in the Moscone Center. Steve was there representing Apple. Jim was there representing Universal. And I've blacked out Jim's identity a bit because Jim is a fabulous music executive and still quite visible today. And I was there representing McDonald's. We were there to talk about launching iTunes, and specifically iTunes for Windows. Jobs had a great product to sell music legally. Jim had lots of music. McDonald's had millions of customers around the world, and more specifically, millions of Windows customers. So, what were we thinking? Well, Steve was thinking about selling iTunes and music. Actually, he was really thinking about selling iPods. But he believed that this would make a difference. I was there thinking about selling burgers, because I thought if you got a free song when you bought a burger, you'd probably buy a burger. It was a great extra offering. And in fact, McDonald's had given away music many times in the past, but always on CD or cassette. And the problem was, no matter what music McDonald's gave away, somebody hated it. It was either old-fashioned, too new, the work of Satan. You know, there was some reason that McDonald's shouldn't be giving away that music. iTunes meant you could give away music, but the customer got to pick the song. So it was beautiful. Now, Jim knew that the music business was under pressure. Millions of songs were being downloaded, but they were being downloaded from Kazaa and Napster, basically illegally, and his business was decreasing. But he was still thinking about CDs. In fact, at the end of that meeting, when we'd kind of agreed on terms, he turned to me, and he talked, well, a little bit like that owner-operator that I imitated before, because it's the only imitation I know how to do. But he said, Joe, this is great. This is fantastic. You know, we'll give away all these songs. It'll be in through iTunes. It's a great way that we're going. Then, when we're finished with that, I want to meet with you because we can take some McDonald's and we can distribute CDs and get people to buy more CDs. He was clinging to that old system. And let's face it, that's where all their money came from. The moral of this story, if you don't change your business model, somebody else will. So we're back here at this model, this menage a trois of marketing communications, or probably, that's probably a little too sexy for what we do. It's probably more like an arranged marriage of marketing communications, trying to reach consumers by this grouping. And we're all under pressure. Media has fragmented like never before. How much? Everybody with a computer and an internet connection is a publisher. It's amazing. Agencies have fragmented. Even though the buzzword is integration, there are a hell of a lot more entities today to integrate. And marketers have to deal with all of that. And marketers have a lingering fear that today, one disgruntled customer with the right connections can reach more people than the marketer can afford to buy. And that's a scary thing. I think the model is creaking a bit and open for something big to happen from the outside, outside of our control. What is it? I don't know. But I think it might be time for idiots to unite, for us to come together and do what? You might ask, change. To create a more effective and more efficient system that doesn't open itself up to two guys in a garage that say, we can do that better and change everything. Now, there are three things that I think are important to make this happen. First, for all of us, own the relationship. It's hard sometimes. You're one piece of a big organization. What difference can I make? You can make a difference. One person can change the way a relationship works. Secondly, invent. We have to go from trying to protect our current business model to inventing the new one, or at least protecting a little and inventing the new one at the same time. And the third one, which is the foundation for everything else, when you're inventing, if it ain't broke, break it. Figure out what somebody else might be doing. The third one is the foundation for everything else. Now, I want to tell you, that is the softest that Aretha Franklin has ever sung. But I only played the music to make it a mnemonic in your own mind so that you remember this, because this is the foundation. Respect, mutual respect for the other idiots. Mutual respect across the borders. You might have heard this. I know I get this a lot. You don't get respect, you earn it. And I'm suggesting that we flip that on its head and we start with respect, and respect becomes something to lose. In other words, respect for our professional colleagues becomes our default position. And we go from everybody is an idiot to I respect the fact that you're a professional, that you have experience and you have expertise that may be different to mine, but that can benefit me. Now, I looked for a great example of this working, and I had to go back a few years. I think that's the last audio I have, so if we could turn down the sound, then there we go. And this is the one that I found. I don't know if you recognize Robert Townsend, but he wrote this best-selling book back in the 1960s called Up the Organization. And it didn't mean up the organization. It meant how to work from the bottom up of an organization. Buy it. It's a fantastic read. But he was an executive at Amex and was recruited to head up Avis back in the 1960s. He came in, he had to turn the business around. They had never made a profit. One of the first things he did was hire an ad agency. He had a chat with Bill Birnbach, and they agreed on how they would work together. He thought it was so good, Townsend did, that he typed it up into a memo, framed it, sent it to DDB to hang on their walls, and at Avis to hang on their walls. This was going to be their advertising philosophy. I don't expect you to read it, but I'm going to call out some things that you're not going to believe are here based on the way we work today. The first one, Avis will never know as much about advertising as DDB, and DDB will never know as much about the rent-a-car business as Avis. An initial point one, mutual respect. Here's one that I bet you haven't seen in your own business. Avis will approve or disapprove, not try to improve, ads which are submitted. Wow. I mean, I've been a marketing director. That's got to be one of the hardest things in the world to do. But Avis did it in those early days. They would approve or disapprove, but not try to improve. And they disapprove only if the ad was wrong in factual things, like they showed the wrong uniform, or they had a car that they didn't rent. DDB was required to only submit for approval those ads which they, as an agency, recommend. They will not see what Avis thinks about that one. This was just a fantastic example to me of mutual respect. The client respecting the talent of the agency and what they brought to the party. The agency respecting the knowledge that the client held and still knowing that they had approve or disapprove process. Excuse me. In our current economic situation, there are only two essentials in the four boxes that were up there: marketers, agencies, media, consumers, and it's these two. What goes in the middle, I don't know. But what I do know is the best people to invent what might go in the middle, that might be better than our current system, are in this room. Or they're in a garage somewhere. And I think that we have to dedicate ourselves to creating it, not just seeing what happens. So enough of my conjecture and hyperbole. Now we want to get to the real world and find out what real marketers, agencies, and media have to say. And let me see if Mark Twain had anything to say about them. You'd be surprised, wouldn't you? Because he, you know, his autobiography wasn't published until 100 years after his death, because he wanted to be able to say whatever he thought. And here's what we got. Marianne Bess, here it is in the book. Marianne is today representing agencies. She's a founding partner of Droga5 in Sydney, started her career as a copywriter. She worked on the launch of America's first mobile phone network. Wow. Yeah, you were 12, exactly. She's worked at Saatchi & Saatchi in New York, Minneapolis, L.A., and Sydney. And in L.A., she led the Toyota team, which was 150 people and across 20 vehicle brands. Today, she is representing all agencies. So, Marianne, I'll ask you to speak for media agencies later. I won't. Sandra Hook. Sandra is representing media. Sandra has extensive media experience. She's built, run, created, and consulted to Australia's leading brands. She's kind of a crossover talent in that she started as a journalist and copywriter. And then since then, she's held senior roles in television and print. And most recently, you probably know, she was CEO of News Life Media. Tara Lord-Smith is representing all marketers. Do it for the team, Tara. Tara is general manager marketing at Simplot, and she's responsible for many brands, Bird's Eye, John West, Legos, Lean Cuisine, and tons more. She spent 8 years at Cadbury Schweppes, where she worked in sales, marketing, and strategy roles. And I think appropriate to the fact that we're meeting here under the Mumbrella umbrella, we should recognize that this year she was named one of the significant seven respected marketers. So please welcome our three panelists. Sandra, I'm going to start with you, and I'd ask you to stand up and take the microphone and speak to the group. Almost everybody has a horror story about the relationships, and you've got one that you threatened to tell, and I want you to tell that before I ask the follow-up question.
Am I on? This is okay?
Yes.
We were talking about it the other day, and I did say to Joe, and I guess all of us know that there's a certain, you know, frisson that comes between the relationship between agencies, media, and clients. But I guess one of the, and I just in passing, I happen to say, you know, I'm sure we're going to focus on all the good things, but, you know, by way of a curious story, one night, towards the end of the year, in fact, it was Christmas Eve, we'd shut the office. There were very few people there. It was maybe Christmas Eve fell on a Wednesday that year. And just a really small skeleton staff was in because most of the company was on annual leave. And I had a call from a media agency who said, I can't get through to key accounts. I want to do the annual negotiations and I want to do them now. I went, wow. You would really want to do that? So, you know, I just, in fact, it was something that we did, you know, I mean, it did result in a number of calls, like why would we be having this call at this time and, you know, how have you not decided to have this call earlier and, you know, who was not there sort of sourcing or resourcing you in a way that we feel that we've got to get to this point. And you know, obviously the call made its way to me because there were very few people in the building. But it is curious sometimes the level of expectations that fall to a media company from various agencies from time to time. But I think by and large, it's not quite as dysfunctional as that would indicate.
I'm sure.
Oh, plenty of good stories.
When does it work? Tell me what goes into
making it work. You know, I think, you know, you mentioned the word respect, but I think you know, there's absolutely got to be a level of trust. I think it works particularly well when both when agencies and clients really do appreciate that that journalists and whatever media it is has the ability to communicate with an audience, because that's what they focus on every single day. So when there is an appreciation that those people represent an independent voice, and yes, it is one of those sort of wedges in the middle, and I think in these times of disintermediation, you know, the whole ability to review the relationship the traditional media holds is one that we'll no doubt be discussing at length today. But, you know, the respect, the collaboration, you know, the timely briefings, the detailed briefings, and that can come from so many people. I mean, we've had many great examples when the briefing's been excellent, timely, early in the process, so that creative thinking and a real ability to drill down into our audience and what they, you know, what might turn them on can occur. When things really go pear-shaped is when people ask you to come up with a concept on the hop. You know, Friday night, can we have something on Monday morning, because we're going in to present. So our teams work over the weekend, and, you know, I guess you get, you know, with weak inputs in, you get pretty weak inputs out, and no one feels very happy about it. But certainly that respect, collaboration, and reasonable briefing are big parts of it.
Would you pass the microphone, please, to your agency partner, Marianne? Marianne, there have been lots of changes in the agency business since the, as I said, called the Great Divorce of 99, when media and creative agencies split apart. There have been lots of changes since then. But give us your perspective on how even the relationship between different agencies is working, and then how that relates ultimately to the client that you're all working for.
Yeah, it's really interesting, actually. I see Robert Morgan in the audience there, who actually recently wrote an interesting article about, again, that that time when media left the agency world and became completely divorced. And I think that one of the things that we're going to see pretty much, and we're starting to see now, is that the pendulum swung way too far, and we ended up in a world where clients were not necessarily getting the most powerful, impactful media plans. They were getting the most efficient media plans, which I think as an agency person we would all say is not necessarily always the best thing for an agency or an agency for a client. So I think that you're going to start seeing better and more collaboration between the best creative agencies and the best media agencies collaborating for the benefit of the clients. And I think that's a really positive change that's going to happen, certainly one that we're working towards. There was one other thing I just wanted to say, too, about the issue of sort of respect. You talked about one of the really good good relationships. It is funny. I think a lot of times we think that organizations can have a relationship, and they can, and we think that teams can have a relationship, and they can, but the most powerful relationships, the most successful ones I've always found, have been led by a one-on-one relationship between two people on either side who tremendously respected each other. Mm. I was lucky enough in the States to work on Toyota, and one of the most successful car launches we had, it's actually a bit of made a virtue out of necessity. My boss, the CEO of the agency, and my client's boss, the CMO of Toyota, absolutely loathed each other. And as a result, we owned the relationship and just kept the two of them out of it, and it was a great experience, actually.
Well, there's some good advice.
Yeah.
Tell your boss to piss off. Tara, would you take the microphone next?
Sure.
We've already heard the incredible changes at agencies in the last 10 years, incredible changes in media. How's that affected marketers, and what do you see as somebody that's responsible for managing not only all of those things, but all the things going on within marketing organizations?
Yeah, I don't know if the other marketers in the room have a similar feel about this that I do, but certainly marketing today, we're just handling so many more things apart from communication. Communication is a very small piece of what we manage. And so I think in the way that certainly I try and, you know, imbue the relationship that I have with my agencies is to get them to take on more of a custodian role for the brand and to take more of an ownership around how to actually bridge that gap between consumers, end consumers, and the brand, and, you know, what the brand should actually be doing in the communication space by giving them pretty much the budget up front. So give them the whole year's budget up front, and then work very closely with them to actually try and solicit opportunities in ways in which we can and make that work harder for us every year. I think the other major change for us is that our distribution channel, which is largely supermarkets, is actually a media channel. So we're seeing the fragmentation of media actually occurring even, you know, right at our own front door. So, you know, a lot of my spend now is actually moving into supermarkets, and actively they are selling themselves as a media channel. Very, very smart, but it's actually changing the way in which we think about integration as well with the agencies and how we obviously get better ROI. And so just on that point, ROI analysis I think needs to be embedded into the processes that we go through in terms of the, you know, the triad relationship, because I don't think enough ROI work's being done. Well, certainly not in my organisation. I'm actually going to embark on structure change in order to account for that and actually make, you know, certain individuals responsible for actually, you know, communicating what ROI is actually happening, because we have finite budgets and we have infinite choices in terms of where we spend our money.
Fantastic.
Yeah, and working faster, because we can turn a new product around in 6 weeks, and I've worked on campaigns where I can't get output for, you know, campaigns for 9-12 months. So I think just the industry should also try and adapt in working faster. And I've got two of my agencies here today, Venus and BWM, and I would say that would probably be one of the key reasons why we work with those guys, is because of speed.
Now, I want to make the opportunity available for any of you to ask a question of the panel. So if you have one, would you put up your hand and then we'll get a microphone to you and you can ask that question? There's one down here in front and one right behind you, too. So I think you were first, though. So hold on just a second, because this will be preserved for posterity on video.
Hello. Hi, my name's Denise Ravel. I'm from the MediaScope Advertising Directory. I just want to ask, sorry, I've forgotten your name in the middle.
Oh, Tara.
Tara, sorry.
It's okay.
I have been listening. Tara, you mentioned supermarkets becoming media channels. Can you just expand on that a little bit? Do you mean more point-of-sale opportunities, them running ads on their websites, branded content opportunities and so on? And if I can also just get the panel's input on the increasing shift to more automated buying. I know digital is certainly moving very quickly in this direction, and, of course, there's moves for a more automated buying opportunities in TV and other media. Thanks.
Yeah, so I think just from the supermarket point of view, you know, you would have seen obviously a lot of sophistication that they're making, particularly Coles. And with MyFive, I think, is a demonstration as well of their intent to actively drive CRM programs. We also are changing the way obviously we go about our media to try and build a lot more owned media into the work that we're doing by building our own CRM programs. But they certainly have a lot more access to consumers than we do. And just through all the different touch points that they have with consumers now and shoppers, you know, if we're going to survive in store, we have to embrace that as a channel. And so they're giving us a lot of opportunities and ways in which we can do that, and then measuring performance. So it's all sort of integrated as packages. And also the way we operate in marketing at Simplot is I've structured for profit, so we actually manage the P&L. So we are actively engaged in driving, you know, portfolio changes, trade spend, the relationship between that. We don't sort of keep it as a finite line. There's lots of blurring happening within, you know, the client side, as well as then the relationship with the agencies.
Now, can go to the back of the room, and would you also identify yourself before you ask the question?
Hi, my name's Mungo McCall from Ubiquity. I guess this is a question for the whole panel, really, regarding competitive monitoring and where you see that naturally fitting within either a media agency or a creative agency, or perhaps a combination of the two.
I think I would genuinely say that that's something that has to be a combination of the two, because you do need to be absolutely monitoring the competitive spend and having a sense of the share of voice that you've got and an understanding of where your competitors are actually advertising. But obviously, as a part of a creative agency, I also believe in the power of the actual work to create the brand above and beyond where it just is appearing. And so for that reason, I'd say both creative and media monitoring are pretty critical for any brand that really wants to keep their brand vital in this world. Donovan.
I can perhaps touch also on that point that you were asking about earlier about, was it about data and automation and buying? I think, you know, one of the challenges that some of the traditional media face, and particularly in newspaper and print, is that they actually probably haven't kept abreast of the needs of, you know, clients and agencies in terms of providing levels of data that really do enable agencies and clients to make the sort of decisions that they want to in a timely fashion, particularly around ROI. And I think it's one of the things that has really held back some areas of the traditional media, and I think if they don't get on board and move quickly with the times and make themselves far more accountable, in fact, they have some really valuable data if they could share it, and it will disrupt their current business model because there will be, as we know, you know, days and months of particular publications where they do sell more or sell less based on what is happening. But if they don't share that information, I think that, you know, it will continue to erode some of the credibility.
Yes, we had a question up front here.
Thanks. Robin from Mumbrella. Just a question about currently where you see the weakest link in relationships. Is it money or people? I mean, right this minute. Between agencies and media.
Wow. I don't know if I want this.
I'll get back to you on that.
No, I still think that it's about the people in terms of not the weakest link, but that make the success. So for us, we're actually happy to pay more to our agencies to make sure that we get better talent. So we would prefer fewer better than lots. And so we spend a lot more time actually on finding, I think, the right people to work with that have the same value set that can help us go on the journey of what we're trying to achieve objective-wise. Budgets are absolutely tight. If you are FMCG like myself, we typically have increasing trade spend and we have declining marketing spend. And this is the reality. You know, this is happening across the board. All my peers are in a very similar situation. So budget allocation now becomes much more complicated with digital as well, because it's just another channel that now you're going to have to service. So budgets are tight. We need great people to help us get greater efficiency out of the lower budgets.
And MB, what do you think from the agency side?
Yeah, I would absolutely agree with that. And I think that, again, when you have a really strong relationship, and Sandra had made the point early on about, you know, a very smart brief, a very aligned client and agency and media team can actually accomplish a lot with less budget than when you have a really inefficient relationship or an unhappy relationship where everything is more difficult and costs more. So streamlining it, having a faster, more collaborative relationship, particularly up front, means that you can often work with smaller budgets and make them go further in more interesting ways than you ever really have been able to do before.
Question from, was there someone else? Yes, okay.
Hi, Ainsley from Carnival Australia. One for you, Marianne, particularly, but also across the panel. Integration teams within the media space in terms of Powered, SMG, FX, etc. How does that work with agencies and obviously from in-house as well, and pitching those capabilities with the integration teams from media houses? How do agencies see that?
Yeah, I would say that I think that's probably something that's still really, you know, kind of in the process of developing. I think you've seen a lot of agencies have kind of gone from this very funny world of where, you know, for example, digital was this completely separate kind of, division within the organization, and that's just completely not the way the actual world works these days. So I'm not exactly sure if that's answered your question. I just think that it is one of the things that's rapidly changing. We view everything that we do as integrated. We almost don't even use the word integrated anymore, because it's just assumed that whatever you're going to be coming up with would take advantage of whatever the best possible media channels are, and we're constantly on the search for understanding those channels, whatever they may be, in greater and greater detail.
I think from a media perspective, you touch on something because I guess, you know, if you're working for a media, you're working for a single channel typically. And I think one of the challenges facing the media too is how do they collaborate with other media and how do they collaborate even with their competitors in order to deliver the best outcomes for clients. You know, it's something that innately works against media organisations because they're all there trying to, you know, meet their own budgets and their own challenges. But equally, you know, as you see the landscape changing and shifting as much as it does, you know, to have that fluidity and to have that openness and that approach is probably, you know, I mean, I look forward to seeing the media groups that can do some of that and do it with, you know, with respect. Because I think they're the ones that are going to make the clients pretty happy in the future.
We've got time for one more question. I think we have one more question.
Craig from Street Press Australia. Just on the level of respect, I come from the publisher point of view. I'm a publisher, both digital and print. And more marketers and agencies are asking to incorporate brands into content, which to me shows a genuine lack of respect for our product and why we have readers. And I just, from an agency perspective, that crossover where we get the PR people, yourselves, and then the marketer saying, can you do this for us? Can you do this for us? Do you also see that as showing almost a total lack of respect for what we are and what we're trying to deliver to our readers? And that sometimes brand association comes with being part of our product rather than representing yours?
Yeah, I absolutely see that as you know, on the path of disrespect for publishers who and for media owners who are genuinely, we were actually having some conversations about kind of the ridiculous level, the extremes that sometimes brands and agencies ask media properties to incorporate their brand. I think that it's not only, I think, one, it's disrespectful to the media companies, but I think it's also incredibly naive about consumers, because the reality is consumers are getting far, far, far more sophisticated. They totally understand. They see through that kind of stuff. I think that they don't have a problem with advertorial stuff that's clearly labeled, but I think you see a lot of people swinging way too far, and they're actually diminishing, ultimately will diminish the value of their brand and the media. So I think smart people are, you know, a bit more respectful about that.
Thank you. Thank you, panel. And thank you to our audience. There's no question that change. Were you going to say something, Sandra?
I was just going to say that we did some research on it just before I left News Life Media, and we'd actually done a study where we'd been out to ask a whole heap of clients about what it was that they really wanted, and what did not come up was reach and frequency. They weren't looking for reach and frequency. They were looking for contextual, relevant, integrated, and value-adding. So I think to your point, but I think that, you know, the sophisticated piece here is how can that be done in a way where a media brand does not feel that it's actually had to sort of, you know, rape itself in order to deliver something to the client, and how can the client use that editorial voice or that independent voice? Because I think, you know, those endorsement pieces, whether they come from from a media, a trusted media brand, or indeed a trusted blogger, are are gold. So I think there just is that piece in terms of respect and making sure. But we can't lose sight as media that these days that things have changed, and that we have to find cleverer ways of being able to integrate our, you know, where it's appropriate, integrate clients' products in a way that sort of services their needs without destroying our credibility or relationship with our with our customers or with our readers.
Just to add to that, I totally agree. And we're obviously, as a team, looking at ways we can do that. The problem is when you come to the media planners, they go, well, we've got this for your competition.
I think, there can be some bullying out there, and there can be some, you know, I mean, people do try some pretty bizarre tricks, and sometimes the lowest common denominator can prevail. I think that can be a shame.
Change is challenging us all, and it's unrelenting. So if you're looking for a moment to take a breath from the change, forget about it, because we will never again see the pace of change move at such a slow pace. It's only picking up. I want to thank our panel and ask that you would thank them as well, and thank you for your active participation.
That's it from this Mumbrella 360 podcast. More soon.